From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Having been through many, I can say with some authority that college commencement addresses can be a bit tedious. And let's face it, most people in the audience just want to get to the part where they joyously throw their mortarboards into the air. In short, usually not very memorable. But then there was the recent commencement address at the University of Oregon. The student body president used her platform to make very controversial statements related to Palestine and ICE and used some very colorful language. And while many applauded her comments, a member of the University Board of Trustees later condemned her words during a conference call. Today on the show, you'll meet her and hear why she said what she said. Then, in the second part of the show, you'll hear about how Oregon's school cell phone ban is doing. Priscilla Moreno is the outgoing U of O student body president, and as such, she gave a commencement speech at the recent graduation ceremony. In many ways, the speech was exactly what one might expect. She talked about her experiences as a college student and also challenged her classmates to be bold and to question authority and to strike out and make a difference in the world and to constantly push the envelope of institutional power. But she also made comments in support of Palestine and the Palestinian people that, if you've been paying any attention to what's been happening on college campuses around the U.S., is a kind of third rail in American politics. And then she finished her speech by using an expletive to condemn ICE. Let's just say members of the Board of Trustees were not amused, and one of them chose to call her out on a conference call later. Today on the show, you'll hear from Priscilla and learn why she said what she said. A quick note, we did reach out to the Board of Trustees and they declined an invitation to be interviewed. Priscilla Moreno, who is the outgoing Associated Students of UO president. Priscilla, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so why don't we start with this? Talk about your intent with the speech that you gave at the U of O commencement.
Yeah, so my speech was all about how our silences will not protect us in the face of injustice. I, when sitting down to figure out what I was going to say for this speech, was weighing a lot of different possibilities, varying from focusing on the celebratory moment that commencement is, or leaning into the usual message that I have at, let's say, rallies or other speeches that I've done. And I chose to stick to my consistent message, which was that it was about a refusal to stay silent in the face of injustice. And that did include talking about immigration enforcement as well as the ongoing genocide in Palestine.
Okay. Maybe for our audience who didn't hear, give a quick synopsis, kind of what were the high points of your speech?
Yeah, I think the quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that I had early on in my speech kind of sums it up, which is, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. And I went on to charge the class of 2026 with speaking about the things that they care about, whether it's difficult, whether there might be consequences, or whether it's unpopular.
Okay. It was a challenging speech. Why was it important to you to stand up in front of your classmates and say the things that you did?
That's a good question. I think that my classmates know where I stand on certain issues, and we are a class and graduates that are going out into the world that is very, very broken. And I think that being at a university, we could feel like we're in this bubble of people that think the same as us. And it's easy to find community on a college campus, but going out into the world, I really wanted to make sure that they left still feeling that sense of empowerment to either continue the work that they were doing or take what maybe they have seen on the University of Oregon campus and create something like that out in the world as well.
As a leader amongst students, what was it important about your leadership philosophy and style in the commencement speech that you made?
When running for student government, I ran on a platform called UO Student Power, and this is a platform that has existed for about 4 years that's focused on running activists, organizers, and allies to be on student government. And this platform has been centered on being pro-labor, anti-genocide, anti-neutrality. So those values I really wanted to be reflected on that stage because I was elected on that platform and therefore expected to uphold those values that people voted for.
Okay. In the audio of your speech, a lot of your fellow classmates applauded you, stood up and gave you an ovation. What did that mean to you? Because obviously, again, it was a very challenging speech and you were challenging them and they responded thusly. What did that mean to you and especially with regard to the intent of your speech?
Yeah, I will say that my entire speech was approved by UO administration minus my final remarks about immigration enforcement and Palestine. So I really was not expecting the roar in Autzen Stadium after those final remarks, but it was really amazing. I gave it a second for people to honor that moment, and I only continued so soon after because I heard Chair Huerta and President Carl Schultz right behind me bickering back and forth a little bit about my pause. So I was really honored to have been the commencement speaker, and I think that roar at Autzen Stadium really validated my decision to add those final remarks there at the end.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Priscilla Moreno. She is the outgoing Associated Students of University of Oregon president. So I think that, you know, a lot of people would see your speech or hear your speech and think, you know, were you nervous? Were you nervous knowing you were going to go up and do something that a lot of commencement speakers don't do?
Funny enough, I didn't know that the expected audience count was going to be close to 35,000 people until the night before. So I was really confident until literally the night before the commencement speech. I had my family pretty much right in front of me in the stands. I had my ASUO team right there up front. So I didn't feel a sense of nervousness that I think people would expect or traditionally believe that a commencement speaker would feel in that moment. I have stood 10 toes down on that same exact message for over a year and in my own personal life for much longer. So I was just very excited to be able to have a captive audience to share that message.
Okay. Have friends, family, or maybe people who disagree with you, have they come up to you afterwards and discussed the speech with you? And what have they said?
Yes. So leaving Autzen Stadium, I could not walk 5 steps without being stopped by a fellow graduate or a family member thanking me for saying what needed to be said, as put in their words. Family members that aren't in the States watched my speech and sent me messages on WhatsApp saying they're very proud of me. Old teachers saw my speech. And then, of course, people that disagree with me after the Register Guard's coverage on it. I got some direct messages from unhappy folks.
What'd they say?
They said things ranging from, the commencement stage is not the place to express your personal political opinions, all the way to, I'm going to call ICE on you and your family.
Okay. You said an expletive directed towards ICE, and that is unusual in a commencement speech. I am wondering, you know, why did you feel it was important to add that modifier about talking about ICE?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. On a more personal level, my parents are both immigrants. I had the chance to honor their names on the commencement stage, which is really special to me. But also at the University of Oregon, students in a coalition that I was a part of recently fought for mandatory ICE notifications. And the university administration pushed pretty hard on that issue. So that message was directed not only at the terror ICE is inflicting on our community and my condemnation of those actions, but also at the University of Oregon administration for not being proactive about protecting our students against that terror.
Okay. I'm going to switch gears now to talk a little bit about the reaction from one of the Board of Trustees Were you surprised by his comments? He if folks didn't see the Register Guard story, he condemned your speech. Were you surprised by his comments?
I was really surprised, and I was surprised by the timing of it. This was after a board meeting that was called as an emergency meeting to vote on an issue that students and the Eugene community have cared about for a really long time, which is the electrification of the University of Oregon heating system. And huge meeting and huge progress towards solving this issue. So I was surprised that he used the end of such a really productive meeting to direct that at me. You know, it could have been a phone call, could have been an email, but very interesting timing. But I do think, as I said in my remarks to the Register Guard, it ironically proved the point of my entire speech, because it was about speaking even when there might be consequences. And I got consequences from the highest board of leadership that is at a university.
Yeah. He called your comments immature. What do you say to that?
I would say that countless alumni, parents, grandparents have messaged me with quite the opposite reaction, saying that they hope to raise children to be as brave. And I think that it was the opposite of immature. I think that I used my voice in the way that I think a university should teach us how to use it.
Yeah, he also said, kind of paraphrasing, that the comments had no place at the University of Oregon. I want to get your reaction to that comment.
I would hope that leadership at the university would see campus as a place for free speech and free thinking. And it's exactly what I did. So I'm really surprised that, again, the leader of the highest board of the university would say that free thinking and free speech has no place on campus.
Do you think that he would have said the same thing that he said to you on that call if you were a 45-year-old white guy?
Definitely not. I have experienced a lot of microaggressions, and I will say quite plainly, misogyny from older leadership at the University of Oregon. You know, I'm a Latina woman, and I think with that comes not being taken seriously and a lot of hypocrisy on their end. So I don't think I would have received those comments if I was an old white man.
Okay. You know, in your talks with the Register Guard, you mentioned you might be thinking about some sort of legal action with regard to what he said in First Amendment rights. I just kind of wanted to ask, are you still considering that?
Yes, I still am considering taking legal action. The extent of that so far has just been connecting with legal scholars as well as students across the country who have sued their university administrations for similar actions taken against them after making such comments.
Okay. I think I know the answer to this, just hearing you speak, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Do you have any regrets, or do you feel even more empowered after your speech?
Yeah, like I said, I think he ironically proved my point. I'm really surprised that he used that end of the meeting with a pre-written piece of paper directed right at me. So I feel very empowered, and I think that my classmates, people that I interact with on social media, feel equally as empowered to speak out even more now and after seeing me face repercussions for my speech.
Okay. Priscilla, my last question for you. And you and I were talking off mic about some of the things you're going to be doing now that you've graduated, and you want to remain very politically active and be a voice. Does what happened at the commencement speech and then some of the repercussions afterwards, is that even more, I don't know, fuel to the fire that you have to make your voice heard?
100%. And I think that politics are absolutely shifting right now. I think people are tired of politicians, leaders that aren't taking a strong stance on certain things. I think my generation especially wants to see leadership stand for something. And I think that's why I saw the reaction from my classmates and their families alike. So I'm really excited to continue to pursue something in advocacy or politics, despite Chair Huerta's remarks about hoping that I self-reflect before I take any form of leadership going forward, because I definitely have reflected, and my decision is to remain being a voice for the voiceless.
Okay. Okay. She is Priscilla Moreno. She is the outgoing Associated Students of University of Oregon president. Priscilla, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's now hear from my colleague at Jefferson Public Radio about how the statewide cell phone ban in schools is working. Jane Vaughn, reporter with Jefferson Public Radio. Jane, it's great to speak to you again. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you remind folks, I read your story about cell phone bans and what the impacts have been. Remind folks about this cell phone ban that Governor Kotek signed into law, what, like a year ago or so?
Yeah, it is. It was an executive order that was signed by the Oregon governor, Tina Kotek. And basically the idea is that it bans cell phone use for students all school day. So what's called bell to bell. The goal of that policy was to basically help students stay more focused in class, to help their mental health. Educators across Oregon had reported that phones disrupt learning, interfere with teaching. So the goal was to just sort of do away with all of that. And this policy really affects high school students mostly. You know, usually cell phones weren't allowed in elementary or middle schools much anyways, but high schoolers were really where the big change happened, because now students can't use their phones in between classes, can't use them at lunch. And so the rule from that executive order was that districts had to adopt a policy by October. This was October of last year, 2025, and they had to begin enforcing that cell phone ban policy by January 1st of this year. So some districts started enforcing it in January, so they're basically one term in, but some school districts started enforcing it last fall, so they didn't have to switch policies midway through the school year. So some have been doing it for a full school year at this point.
And you've talked to some of the districts, some of the administrators in sort of your neck of the woods in Southern Oregon. What did they tell you?
I talked to quite a few superintendents, like you said, throughout our region, and they've mostly said that the rollout has gone better than they expected. They mostly said it's been easier than they expected and that it's been going really well. They said they've had more student engagement in class, improved student mental health. I talked to one high school principal who said that students' behavior has been more on task. They haven't had as much problem with student behavior, more face-to-face interaction between students, fewer behavioral problems, fewer social media-related issues. So in general, they said it's gone very well with the rollout.
What about enforcement? Did they talk about that, how either challenging or maybe it wasn't as challenging as some might expect to enforce the ban?
I think there are always some challenges. There are obviously still some violations, and you have to take your kid's phone away for the day. You know, it's not 100% that kids are not violating the policy. But in general, it seems like it's been pretty good. Some of the challenges to enforcing are, you know, sometimes the students are used to communicating with their parent throughout the day or, mm-hmm. you know, coordinating things with them. And then you're sort of putting the onus on teachers to sort of be keeping an eye out for students. It can be hard to monitor students outside of class. So for example, Central Point School District that I talked to, they're really focusing mostly on the in-class enforcement of the bans, no cell phones within class, and it's just a little bit harder to monitor students outside of that instructional time.
Sure, sure. I wonder too, it might be that you know, parents like me might think that, you know, oh, kids are so tied to their cell phones, they'd never want to give them up. But I'm wondering in some of the folks that you talk to, I wonder if there was an element of kind of almost like relief, like maybe some of the kids that they saw were almost happy to not have to engage with social media via their phone during class.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And one of the superintendents said it even makes it a little bit easier because it's coming straight from the governor. So the kids can't really push back. You know, there's no pressure to argue with the superintendent over it. It's coming from the governor, from the top, can't do anything about it. And so the kids kind of have to roll with it. But the superintendent said that these kids are really, you know, craving human connection. They want to be able to talk more with each other about what they're learning. One of them told me, because that really helps them process what they're learning in class. Another superintendent told me that the high schoolers really do understand it once you explain it to them like an adult, right? You don't condescend and say, you can't do this and this is bad. Mm-hmm. But if you just explain to them the science and what we're trying to do for kids' mental health and social media and all of these things, that kids, for the most part, do understand it and accept it. They might still be pulling their phone out immediately at the end of the school day, but at least for that bell-to-bell time, they're not on their phones ideally at all. And the superintendents also said they haven't seen much pushback from parents either. In general, it's been positive feedback from students and parents and staff as well.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jane Vaughn, reporter with Jefferson Public Radio. You talked about that some of the administrators talked about the importance of restoring human connections. Maybe pull that string a little bit more, because, you know, it's been a long time since I've been in high school, and that was kind of a big part of school, was interaction with teachers, with your friends, with students. You know, if the phone is not being used as much as it used to be, I mean, I imagine that's a pretty positive byproduct. Kind of expand a little bit more about what some of those administrators said about that.
I mean, I think that that is the goal, is to get kids just talking to each other more. You know, if there's a down moment or an awkward moment in a classroom or at lunch, you can't just pull out your phone and scroll social media, as we all tend to do. And so you're forced to talk to your classmates. Maybe you're talking about the reading or whatever the assignment is. And, you know, some schools do still have laptops that they might be using. So it's not that tech is completely banned in schools, but, you know, during lunch or in between classes, school districts are seeing more, you know, the superintendents I talked to said they're seeing more students just talking to each other in the halls. No one's got their head down looking at their phone walking in the hallway. You have your head up and you catch someone's eye and you say hi and you talk to them. So it's just sort of removing that, what I would call distraction, and then you just sort of talk more to the people around you.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how this continues. She's Jane Vaughn, reporter with Jefferson Public Radio. Jane, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we'll take you to Green Island, a beautiful habitat that is being preserved and restored by the Mackenzie River Trust. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.